Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Incognito et al. Titled, Evidence for Differential Control of Muscle Sympathetic Single Units During Mild Sympathoexcitation in Young Healthy Humans. This article was published November 2, 2018. Joining me today are Associate Editor Nisha Charkoudian, Lead Author Philip Miller, and Content Expert Craig Steinbeck. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. The sympathetic nervous system is a ubiquitous controller of cardiovascular function in humans. Sympathetic nerves innervating the skeletal muscle vasculature can be measured in humans as muscle sympathetic nerve activity, or MSNA. One of the classic indicators for risk of future hypertension is the response of the cardiovascular system to acute stressors. In the present study, the author's aim was to evaluate mechanisms for these acute responses in terms of the activity of the sympathetic nervous system. They used two different types of stressors, a stressor specific to blood pressure regulation called low-level LBNP, and an exercise-based stressor of rhythmic hand grip exercise. They measured MSNA responses to these stressors, focusing specifically on the activity of individual neurons or fibers within the MSNA signal. Phil, could you summarize your study briefly for us in terms of goals and major findings?
Perfect. Thank you, Nisha. So broadly, the primary goal of our study was to look at two classic sympathoexcitatory stressors, lower body negative pressure and an exercise stimulus, and determine if we could identify two subpopulations or more that existed within the MSNA signal, so within these muscle sympathetic single units, which respond oppositely to the same stress. That is, that they have either a positive or negative feedback response. And the major findings that we had from the study were that in both interventions, we were able to detect a small proportion of, we've labeled these paradoxical fibers. Those are ones that respond in a positive feedback manner. That is, in response to low-level negative pressure, when we have reductions in central venous pressure, that instead of seeing increases in MSNA activity, they actually decrease. And then same thing with a rhythmic hand grip. Instead of seeing classic increases in the single unit activity or firing frequency, we're actually seeing decreases. So this represents de-recruitment of these single units, even though the average single unit and multi-unit response was for an increase in sympathetic activity in both of these stressors.
Great. Thank you very much, Phil. Could you tell us about how your findings relate to current thinking about stress and its effect on activation of the sympathetic nervous system?
Sure. When we designed the study, it was really as a follow-up to some of the prior work that I have done, where we were looking at these responses of muscle sympathetic single units in response to lower body negative and positive pressure in older and patients with heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. And what we wanted to understand is if this existence of this paradoxical proportion or this small proportion that we're responding oppositely, if that existence occurred in young, healthy individuals. And then as a second point to that, we wanted to see if we could determine, again, that proportion or that subpopulation in a more integrative challenge, such as exercise. So this is really building off work by myself, as well as work using a wavelet cluster approach that Kevin Shoemaker and colleagues have been demonstrating quite nicely. And so I think these findings support this idea that we can have this differential control of muscle sympathetic fibers in response to stress. That is, that we don't have to simply recruit, we can also de-recruit individual fibers in response to these excitatory stressors.
Thanks, Phil. And I think that's a really important point, that the regulation can go in either direction, which actually allows for more subtle regulation under certain circumstances. Craig, I'd like to ask you if you could comment on your perspective regarding how these sympathetic neural signals give us information about cardiovascular responses to stress.
Yes. Well, for starters, I think that this work and that of others exploring patterns of sympathetic firing and recruitment, or de-recruitment in this particular case, it's an important step forward for a long time, I guess, in human research, we were limited to characterization of the occurrence of, or the size of bursts of activity. And from this past work, I mean, there are clear associations between pathology and high sympathetic activity. But at the same time, I think there's clear examples in the literature of individuals with really high sympathetic activity who are otherwise healthy and patients who have low sympathetic activity. So understanding the complex nuance of how individual neurons or groups of neurons are activated or deactivated in this case, I think that that will hopefully help us clarify how some of these observed contradictions occur.
Right. Thank you, Craig. Phil, did you have any additional thoughts on that?
Sure. At the end of the day, you know, the classic multi-unit sympathetic response is driven by the underlying single unit changes. So we are seeing, you know, in the groups that have more paradoxical fibers, we do see that they have lower integrated muscle sympathetic nerve activity. So it does provide a rationale. Now the really key question is, what's driving these proportional differences? And is it simply that we're detecting it in some people because it's, you know, a small group of fibers that we're measuring from out of a very large pool? Or is it something that's characteristic of the regulation of the sympathetic nervous system within that individual? And I think that's exactly where we'd like to go.
Right. That makes sense. Craig, I'd like to switch focus a little bit to talk about a different sympathetic stressor, which is orthostatic stress. As you know, low-level LBNP is sometimes used to simulate the hemodynamic effects of standing up, which we all have to do multiple times on a daily basis. What are your thoughts on how these findings might relate to variability in a more applied example, such as orthostatic intolerance?
I think this is a really interesting consideration. I think it's reasonable to hypothesize that more paradoxical deactivation in response to LBNP could result in orthostatic intolerance. However, I do think there are some important questions to consider. First, although paradoxical derecruitment may theoretically lead to lower developed vascular tone, I guess we have to ask how much this might be balanced by the anticipated responses. For instance, is there a greater firing frequency in anticipated neurons or recruitment of additional neurons that pick up the slack, so to speak? So I think that this would be an excellent study to carry out to ask that question in particular, but I see where this lesser response could lead to orthostatic intolerance.
Phil, could you talk about any thoughts you have on the implications for orthostatic intolerance?
I think one of the keys to start off is that we are a little bit limited in making conclusions based on that because we don't have a measure of central venous pressure. We don't have a way to standardize to ensure that the stimulus is identical in terms of its effects on cardiac filling pressure. So that's one just comment ahead of time. But clearly, I think that it's worth testing whether individuals that are susceptible to orthostatic intolerance have this higher proportion of paradoxical single unit responses. And this would actually align very closely with work that I've done in the past showing that in heart failure patients that they have an increase in this paradoxical response to increases in filling pressure, this kind of paradoxical sympathoexcitatory stress that they experience. So I think it's quite reasonable to determine now whether these different response patterns manifest in different clinical conditions.
Thank you. I think that's a very important point about heart failure because, as you know, some of the first work on single unit activity was done in heart failure patients and showing some of the differences that are seen pathologically in heart failure patients with single unit activity. So at this point, I'd like to open up the conversation and ask, maybe starting with Craig, if there's any other thoughts or comments to help put this study in perspective for our audience.
Well, I'd like to come back to the question around what the stress responses may mean. I think it's important to recognize in the paper that both types of these neurons had the same baseline activity. So they appear to have a similar homeostatic set point, as it were. And the differences then became apparent during these stressors that were applied, LBNP and hand grip. As Nisha, you pointed out, we know that the stress responses are higher in certain pathologies. And we know that hand grip in particular is predictive of the development of hypertension. So it's perhaps not surprising that paradoxical deactivation was less apparent in higher responders, as these should be related. But I think it's important to question now what this says about the ongoing responses to stress in daily life and then the future development of cardiovascular disease conditions, as you pointed out, linked to heart failure, but then, as we know, to hypertension.
Right. Very important points. Thank you. And Phil, what additional thoughts did you have on your paper and kind of its broader implications?
We have a wealth of information about muscle sympathetic nerve activity. And one of the questions that remain are what drives the variability between individuals, even in the healthy state? And is that variability related to any sort of future risk? And I think that that's a very unresolved question in our field that requires further study. And so what we're trying to do here is to determine now what drives these responses. So is this proportion driven by fibers that are linked to specific afferent reflexes? And so it's parallel stimulation. Or is this kind of central nervous system regulation in how it's handling the responses to a stress? And quite simply, it's better able to meet demand when it can change in a kind of a recruitment-de-recruitment pattern. What we'd like to do, obviously, now is to determine the clinical significance of this. And so that results in studying populations that may have differences in these proportions, such as hypertension, for example, as one example, and determining whether those individuals have different proportions or different firing rates of these individual proportions that are driving the neural signal. And then by determining kind of what the mechanisms are that determine these proportions, we may have a better understanding of how we can treat or target individual pathways.
Very important points, Phil. Thank you. And I'd like to conclude by thanking Craig and Phil for joining us today for this AJP Heart podcast.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.